virtually every story that has been published in the corporate news media ever since then.
Gareth Porter and the news dissector Danny Schechter. He was on a commercial station in Boston for many years and had that moniker, that M.O., as he put it. We'll have some more of Gareth Porter. It's been a constant theme for me to get him on the air because nobody else is saying it. Nobody else has researched it in the depth. And you don't hear MEK anymore now that they're not dropping any money since they got their terrorism appellation removed by hiring big guns all around the Washington scene. Thanks for listening. Opinions are those of the speakers. It's time for the Labor Hour.
We're not a working. Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at WEFT.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob to present us with some underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, give them a call at 217-328-2295. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And also, programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees.
Okay, thank you, Bob. We're going to be having a guest call in at half past the hour. Her name's Liz Warren, not the Elizabeth Warren, but Liz Warren's with Progressive Democrats of America. She wants to talk a little bit about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and possibly a few other issues. So anyway, first we're going to be just want to mention before we get into the news stories is that I attended the showing of Minor Shot Down last Monday night. It was hosted by Ken Salo and James Kilgore at the Channing Murray Foundation. It was a really good turnout for a Monday night, and man, I'll tell you, it's a very powerful film. I'm going to be airing that on Labor's View TV tomorrow, and part one, and part two will be the following Sunday on June 1st, and I'll give you some more information as far as times and everything later in the program. So I guess now we can go to some news stories, and we'll start with Bob.
All right, Dave. Thursday, hundreds of protesters pushing for higher fast food wages returned to protest outside McDonald Corporation headquarters. You got this story in there,
that's okay. It's a good one.
Thursday, smaller protests near the company's Oak Brook campus came after Wednesday afternoon march and protest in which 138 individuals, including 101 McDonald's workers, were arrested for trespassing on the company's property. And it says, Demos, a public policy think tank in New York City, said fast food workers are U.S. workforce's lowest paid occupation. A report found that the CEO-to-worker compensation ratio for the fast food industry was more than 1,000 to 1 in 2013. And the 139 protesters arrested on Wednesday, police said, 38 clergy and union activists and 101 McDonald's employees, and the workers were chanting, "Hey, McDonald's, you can't hide. We can see your greedy side." And "No Big Macs, no fries. Make our wages supersize."
That's a good one. Yeah. Both those are good. I heard the last one, but I never heard that first one.
Yeah. And it was interesting. Oak Brook Police was assisted by several surrounding area departments. And actually, some of the stories said that it was riot.
Yes.
State police.
Yes.
That were up there.
I saw the photos. And, oh, yeah. They were in full RoboCop riot gear. I
thought they used to do that in Decatur, except they were behind the Decatur police, kind of concealed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were there just, I guess, in case things got out of hand, and they'd come out of their buses. And
mm-hmm.
attack.
I thought it was interesting after Nick Koch's stirring reading of that story about the Ludlow Massacre and about the Colorado that, you know, we had on the show last week, the Colorado mm-hmm. National Guard supporting the miners, well, or supporting
the mines, the miners, yeah.
The corporations.
Yeah. Companies. Colorado Fuel and Iron, owned mm-hmm. by John the D. Rockefeller.
Yeah. Right. And they brought out submachine guns and stuff to just rip up the tents and the people and stuff like mm-hmm. that. I mean, and, you know, time haven't changed too much in 100 years, I guess.
Yeah, well, they changed, but they're reverting back to the old system.
Well, I think the most poignant part of the story is the next day when the telephone linesman comes across the camp and starts poking around in the ashes and pulls a bed coil spring up and finds the charred bodies of 11 children.
Right.
And was it two or three women?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, those were only some of the casualties. In fact, the leader of the camp, who is a Greek American whose name I can't remember right now, he thought that they were going to be protected by the National Guard. And he went up to greet them and they just shot him, you know, on sight.
Mm-hmm.
But,
interestingly, on Thursday, while the protests were going on outside, an overwhelming majority of shareholders, 93.5%, voted in favor of the measure regarding how executive salaries were calculated, and CEO Don Thompson's 2013 compensation is $9.5 million,
mm-hmm.
Which sounds like a lot of money, but in some respects, it's not much. You know, McDonald's, I think, is a majority owner in Chipotle's Mexican restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
They got co-CEOs, and between the two of them, they were paid $58 million last year.
Wow. Then that means they're just going to have to raise the wage of the McDonald's CEO. You know, they got to have parity there, man. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So one of them makes like $26 million, and the other one makes like $22 million or something like that. So Chipotle recently announced it's raising its prices, but they were blaming it on an increased commodity cost.
Increased commodity cost, yeah.
But, anyway,
Their CEO's labor is a commodity.
That's
of
right.
Of course, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it says last month McDonald's had disappointing 5.2% decline in quarterly profits, you know. So,
okay.
But they're still rewarding their CEOs and they refuse to pay their workers more than about $8 an hour average.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yep, unbelievable. Yes, I got a little story about, this is from a blogger, retired teacher named Fred Klonsky. Says, I've been accused of making Illinois pension theft too big a deal. Some have suggested that Illinois pension theft is just a local Illinois problem, but the scandal is actually a national one, and the fight back must also be national. Something to keep in mind, the upcoming NEA and AFT teachers unions national meetings. And he said, today, Pondo Daily's David Sirota goes further in the New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's use of pension funds as his personal campaign resource. New Jersey and federal pay-to-play rules have a very clear purpose, to prevent executives at financial firms that do business with the state from making contributions to New Jersey politicians or political organizations that operate in New Jersey. Over the past few weeks, Pondo has reported several cases where New Jersey's rules have at best been ignored and at worst clearly violated, in the awarding of pension management contracts to political donors. Throughout our reporting, and as New Jersey's pension crisis is now making national headlines, the one question we're most frequently asked is, how widespread is the problem? And today, after a two-month investigation, we answer that question. And it goes on to show that, in fact, yes, this is a national problem. It's being conducted by Democratic and Republican governors and legislatures around the country. So it's not just a Republican phenomena. This is basically, you know, a corporate policy now to rob the public sector in many ways. Pension theft is one way to do that. And this is a spreading problem, and, you know, it needs to be dealt with, and, you know, a fight back needs to happen. So,
you know, Dave, sometimes look at this, and of course there's corruption all around on both sides, but it always seems to me that the farther you go to the left,
mm-hmm.
the more honest the people are.
Well, of course.
You know, in fact, even anarchists, you know, the farthest you can get are known as the conscience of the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it is, it has a lot to do with sort of religious values and teachings in this country, especially of late. And that's the idea that I think was really started being promulgated in the 20th century, and that is of cheap grace.
Cheap grace. What is that exactly?
That means, yes, I am a sinner, but I do believe in Jesus and take him for my personal savior, and I will be forgiven. And that's, for example, who's that New York City prosecutor who's going after Wall Street that got caught with the hookers.
Oh, you're talking about Elliot
Spitzer.
Spitzer, yes, thank you.
Yes, for every Elliot Spitzer, there's probably a half a dozen Republicans, including that senator from the deep south of family values named Vitter, you know, who was applauded when he walked back into Congress. Didn't even, you know, got caught the same, almost exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. No consequences at all.
Mm-hmm.
No social consequences, and probably he believes no moral or religious consequences, and apparently no political consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is probably one of the major divides between conservatives and progressives, is their feelings of being forgiven. I mean, I've had a lawyer tell me that conservative religious people are some of the hardest people to collect from.
Yeah. Okay.
I got another story here. But
okay.
Actually about coal mining again, because I don't think we talked about this last week, but on May 13th, hundreds of miners were trapped nearly a mile underground after an explosion and fire cut off electricity to the depths of a coal mine in Soma, Turkey.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. The resulting disaster has now become the worst in Turkish history, claiming the lives of 301 workers, with nearly another 500 escaping or being rescued. It says in the aftermath of the chaotic episode, there's no shortages of outspoken employees at the Inez coal mine, raising concerns about the safety measures taken by the Soma Coal Mining Company, as well as the insufficiency of government inspections. What there is a shortage of accountability for the tragedy. And it says, work safety? There is no work safety. They cut corners wherever they can. This from a coal miner in Soma for 9 years. He says, the foremen receive a bonus if we produce more coal than planned, so all they worry about is working faster and extracting more coal. And again, I want to relate back to Nick Koch's reading of that story. I went and did a little more research after that. That's exactly one of the major contentions of the miners striking out there in Colorado, mm-hmm. was the fact that they were only paid for the amount of coal that they took out of the mine.
The old piece rate.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that if they went in there to shore up the ceilings of the mine shafts and stuff like that, they didn't get paid for it and mm-hmm. stuff. So it would almost pretty much force workers to strictly be working on the piece rate thing. And that's the same thing going on there in Turkey and stuff. They talk about inspections that were planned weeks in advance. It says, we always prepared for these visits, cleaning everything, temporarily closing dangerous shafts, hiding faulty machines, he said. In our mind, we are not allowed to use diesel-fueled machinery. These machines were hidden away for the inspections. We were also instructed to tell them that everything was just fine, that we were happy, you know. So this and, you know, Erdogan, the Turkish prime minister, mm-hmm. has been criticized severely because he kind of related and says, well, there's disastrous coal mine explosions and things like that in other mines in China and India and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But Turkey, apparently, they've lost 1,000 coal miners in Turkey since between 2002 and 2012.
Wow.
And there's a talk of collusion between the government and the company that runs Soma and stuff mm-hmm. like that. In fact, 2 weeks before it, the ruling party had put down something from the Republic Party there, trying to push for more inspections at the mines. And just 2 weeks before this disaster, the ruling party, the AKP, I think, mm-hmm. Ended up pushing that down in the Turkish parliament, you know. So,
well, this is what happens when this trend has been going on for a while, since the 90s, actually even before, to where corporations have basically ruled the world. I mean, they've controlled governments. You know, we're supposed to have democracies, and that's We actually, in reality, have very little democracy. We have no control over our elected representatives because they don't fear us. They fear their corporate campaign contributors. And that's what's got to change. You know, it's going to take a lot to reverse this trend that's been going on. Actually, probably started back during under Ronald Reagan. Really, the last year of Jimmy Carter. If you think about he's the first one to sort of get the toe in the door with the deregulation of the airlines and trucking industry. You know, but Ronald Reagan was the one that really bulldozed through everything and has made these institutional changes that we're still living under. And that's been just getting worse every year.
It's not just here. It's in Turkey,
yep,
too.
It's spread worldwide, yes.
Soma Coal Mining Company was a private company contracted to operate the government-owned mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it says, in 2005, Soma Holding took over the reins of the mine from the government amid a push for privatization that mm-hmm. began in the 1980s and has become a pillar of the ruling Justice and Development Parties, the AKP, neoliberal restructuring.
Yep.
You know? So, I mean, we've infected the rest of the world with this corporate profits rule everything.
Yep. Deregulation, privatization, neoliberal policies.
And it always costs more. I was reading an article. I wish I could remember where it was. And it mentioned like five kind of disastrous privatizations in the United States, including the idiocy of Chicago selling its parking meters.
Oh, yeah.
And there was another one where somebody had a toll road. And there was sort of a non-compete clause in that toll road where the state could not do, or any body at all could do anything to compete with that toll road, which would be like, I don't know, maybe adding a high-speed rail buses or build another road. You know, that's ridiculous. And the TPP, which you say the guest will be Mrs. Warren will be talking about coming up, you know, that sort of this sort of codifies that for the entire world, you know. Maybe somebody could some kind of non-compete things internationally. And that's another thing, too. A lot of these things are being sold to foreign corporations.
Mm-hmm.
I see Spain is supposedly, has such bad economic problems, but I see Spanish corporations like Husqvarna.
Mm-hmm.
They bought almost every power saw company in the world except Steel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you see their water companies coming in and like taking over entire national.
Yeah.
Water supplies.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about. What they call free trade is not free trade. It's corporate managed trade. In other words, it exclusively benefits the corporate sector at the expense of citizens around the world. In their citizens, their living standards, their food and safety standards, and their democracy. I mean, it goes right to the heart of democracy because, as you pointed out, by having some kind of exclusive agreement of a toll road prohibiting, I mean, it's controlling policy. It's controlling the will of the voters.
You know? There's sort of an interesting theory, kind of a dialectical theory, that at some point all the corporations will eventually fall except for one. And that corporation will be de facto kind of socialism of some sort. Probably not democratic socialism.
Well, no, it'd be more like national socialism.
Yeah,
like
because
the Nazis.
It would be the only power left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to be right back. And you're listening to The World Labor Hour on Listener Support Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign. Stay tuned.
Dogs of Tijuana, filled with garbage and stones, in the streets and in the fields, cursed and crushed beneath the wheels, but together we are strong. Our songs echo in the darkness, down the Maquiladora's halls, where Brother Solomon was tortured. One tree in the orchard casts a shadow on the wall. Is hard and long, but the dogs are coming home. We are the dogs of Tijuana, left for dead in the ravine. arroyos and the valleys, the sewers and the alleys, we shiver and we dream. So don't stop to ask directions if you think you lost your way. The wrath of the lion is the wisdom of God, and every dog has its day.
Okay, that was Tom Morello with the song Dogs of Tijuana. And yes, if the corporate sector with their free trade agreements and corrupting of democracy have the way, that's what this world's going to be. It's going to be a dog-eat-dog world, more than so than it already is. Okay, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on WFT, Listeners Park Community Radio Station in Champaign, Illinois. And want to do some quick public service announcements. Thanks again for making Monday night screening of Rihad Dizay's powerful documentary "Miners Shot Down" a huge success. The people attending spontaneously generated over $300 for the strike support fund, which my colleague traveling to South Africa today, Ms. Jan Brooks, will deposit in the support fund account as per urgent. This was a special thanks to Ken Salo for making that happen. And you can contact me at 217-721-0583 to find out if you're interested in helping out these striking miners in Marikana, South Africa. Speaking of which, if you missed the screening Monday night, you can catch Miners Shot Down, the story of the Marikana South African miners who were unarmed and shot at by the South African police, resulting in over 130-some miners shot and resulting in some 34 deaths. This happened back in August 2012. There's still government inquiries into it, and the film was a really powerful film, and it's primarily police and mining security video footage that he put together, and it's interspliced, of course, with the current hearings, the inquiry hearings going on in the shooting. But anyway, you can catch part one of Miners Shot Down on Labor's Worldview TV tomorrow from 4 to 5 p.m. At Comcast Channel 6, or if you don't have Comcast, you can go live and get it on the web at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org, and then part two will be showing next Sunday, June 1st. And you can tune in today from 2 to 3 for another sports show with host fellow worker Neil Parthen and WRFU 104.5. And you can also catch another sports show on Comcast Channel 6 on Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. So, okay. So we're waiting for Liz Warren to call in here. And in the meantime, Bill, you look like you were kind of surfing the web there. Anything interesting?
Yeah, I got. I'm here on YouTube looking at. I've got some videos from McDonald's.
Okay.
I'll listen to them a little bit, and maybe later we'll have some.
Very good. Okay. Hello, WFT. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Warren with MoveOn.org and PDA calling in.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling today, Liz. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I am a regional organizer with MoveOn and also a member of PDA, Progressive Democrats of America. I am based in Southern California, and I'm currently working on a campaign to defeat Fast Track for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement.
Okay, and I believe there's also legislation going on for the Trans-Atlantic Partnership, too, as well. Is that correct?
Well, that is true. Actually, the negotiations began for that last summer,
mm-hmm.
and it is a parallel agreement, if you will, with European countries that would very much resemble the Trans-Pacific Agreement that's been in discussions now with the U.S. for about 4 years.
Okay. Could you go maybe let the listeners know who aren't familiar with what the Trans-Pacific Partnership, what kind of effect this will have if it's passed on Americans in general?
Okay, in brief, it's actually a trade agreement that makes an end run around all kinds of regulations that corporations have had to deal with and don't like. For example, worker protections, environmental protections, consumer protections, fair trade and practice laws, all kinds of things, banking regulations, you name it, internet freedom. What what these corporations did was about 600 or so have been involved as trade advisors, and they wrote in all kinds of provisions that gave them exactly what they wanted. The trade agreement itself is not up for a vote. What we are working to try and stop is legislation that has been loosely called fast track. It's actually a type of trade authority that the president needs in order to be able to work on behalf of Congress and the people of the United States and negotiate with other countries. So right now, we're still working to defeat fast track, and that would allow the president to actually negotiate the agreement with all of these favorable terms that the corporations want and sign the deal and bring it back to Congress for a quick up or down vote without any amendments and with very limited debate and with no public input. What we're trying to do is make sure that it gets heard in public so that there can be some attention paid to it.
Yes, and what I understand is that even members of Congress haven't been able to get copies of this Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement. Is that correct?
Well, that was true until 2013, actually.
Okay.
Last year, they technically gave access to members of Congress, but I will say technically because for practical purposes, it has not been easy.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the trade agreement negotiating text itself has been classified secret by the president means that only certain people have access. So congressional aides, the folks that typically would gather research and material for their bosses and give them briefings, are not allowed to participate. So a member of Congress, for example, you know, Congressman Alan Grayson was one who actually went through this, and he couldn't describe what he'd read, but he told us about the process, was able to go in. He had to sit in a room, monitored, and was able to leaf through these thousands of pages of you know, negotiating text, could not take notes, could not make copies, could not tell anybody about it or bounce ideas around or anything. So it's sort of like you can sit there, Mr. Congressman, and read it, but then you must remember what you read. So for all intents and purposes, no congressman can really spend that many hours sitting and learning about this before being asked to vote on it if they had to vote on it. So it's not a very practical situation. So, yes, for Congress, it doesn't make sense. Many of them will not have an opportunity to read it because they just don't have the time.
Well, I tell you, it's amazing. I mean, obviously, they've got something to hide if they're going to this great length. And frankly, I mean, what if Alan Grayson would talk about it publicly? What could happen to him?
Well, I mean, there are folks who've said that members of Congress might be able to bring it up in floor debate, but that's kind of a sticky question because national security, you know, in our post 9/11 America is taken pretty seriously by the government. So I think no member of Congress is going to bring it up publicly. I mean, they wouldn't risk breaking the law.
Well, that's too bad because I think, you know, when our democracy is at threat, it's the duty of elected representatives to break unjust laws. And I personally think Alan Grayson should have came out and just publicly made statements and let's see him arrest him. Let's see him arrest him, and you know, can you imagine the firestorm that would happen? But anyway, that's just my commentary here. We need to get more into how really bad this is. I mean, you know, you kind of briefly mentioned about, you know, how this will have effect on you know environmental standards, labor standards, you know, and internet access and stuff. I mean, but what I've seen, I mean, this is some real stuff that's going to really affect people very badly. I mean, your average person, working person in the United States. And, you know, it's, I think what's even more threatening, as threatening, I should say, is, you know, how this is a threat to our democracy.
You're absolutely right, because it puts us in a position where, because of a part of this agreement called the investor state rights and the investor state resolution process, which, let me explain a little bit about that. When countries enter into a trade agreement with one another, they have to agree to abide by the terms of the trade agreement itself, which means that their laws need to conform to those things that they mutually agree upon. And in the past, that wasn't necessarily problematic. It would, you know, keep some dictator from saying, okay, sure, we're entering a trade agreement and then changing the rules, you know, down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that idea in principle is not a bad idea. But what's happened, and it sort of began in the Nixon era and has gotten progressively worse up through the World Trade Organization. You know, we've all heard about the battle in Seattle and the Colombian Free Trade Agreement and the Central American Free Trade Agreement, you know, CAFTA. what has happened is that more and more corporations are being given the kinds of rights that countries have been given in the past. So they're essentially our agents. And in this particular agreement, which is really audacious on the part of these corporations, they are asking for the same rights as countries. They want to actually be able to sue nations for violations of things that are, well, for expected future profit loss. So, for example, if a particular country has a law that protects the environment and a company goes over and opens up a factory there and they want to pollute like crazy and, you know, conforming to the environmental standards would cost them millions of dollars, they can sue even before they've done that, because they can sue in these investor state tribunals for expected future profit loss. So they can basically, you know, they could sit down and figure it out on paper and say, we would have had to have spent millions of dollars and we would have lost this much in profit, so now you owe it. So what that does in a very practical sense is force countries to either change their laws, you know, to relax standards that protect the environment or people or all kinds of other things, and I'll get into some of the other things like the intellectual property stuff in a minute. But they must change their laws or they're going to have to pay big time for the privilege of enforcing them. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, you know, the effect on democracy, you know, we are a representative democracy. You know, our members of Congress, you know, take our voices to Washington. We pass laws that, you know, people want. You know, for example, you know, in California, we're fighting for a fracking moratorium. In other states, they have, you know, for example, North Dakota has public banking. That would not be legal. Certain states that you know, protect workers have you know, minimum wage standards or you know, OSHA, all kinds of things that we have in place that we've taken for granted for the last maybe 50 years or more. All of these kinds of things could very easily be threatened because corporations can pretty much move around the country and around the globe. And when you think about the fact that, like, Vietnam, for example, which pays their workers pennies and employs children, if they're a partner to this trade agreement, and we all agree on this, there is nothing to stop a corporation from, say, headquartering in Vietnam and then coming over to the United States and insisting on equal treatment here.
Yes.
Which would mean that we would have to conform to the standards in Vietnam. And,
yeah.
And, you know, and that's probably the most extreme example, but that's the sort of principle we're talking about.
Yes, and, yeah. You know, even under when NAFTA was implemented under Bill Clinton back in the 90s, there were some cases to where the NAFTA agreement actually overrode voter referendums on the local level. I believe there was one case. I think there was two cases I'm familiar with. One had to do with a hog factory, which was polluting the groundwater, and the residents actually had a voter referendum in which passed by 90-some percentile, and the federal government basically said that they basically overrode it and said, you know what, this is part of the trade agreement, we don't care what your voter referendum is, and if necessary, we'll send federal troops to protect this corporate entity against your local police department, if necessary, to enforce the, you know, the referendum. That's frightening stuff. You know, and there's another case I know of out in California in which a company that manufactured a certain pesticide, I think they were Canadian, basically the county there banned its use because school children were becoming, you know, seriously ill from it and everything. And they successfully sued that county for, I think tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars. That they insisted on keeping the ban for public safety reasons. So this is frightening stuff, very frightening. And I've heard, and this is under NAFTA, okay? And I've heard this, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I've heard it's called NAFTA on steroids. So, I mean, my God, and considering everything's been kept hush-hush and as secret as possible, just think of, I mean, this is just what some, you know, what we know about it. Who knows what's actually in more in the details that haven't been seen by congressmen or any of the general public.
You're absolutely right, David. And what we do know, we only know because documents have been leaked.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's kind of, you know, that's, you know, kind of a scary thing when, you know, the public and, you know, groups like Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who protect the public interest, you know, have to rely on leaked information in order to make observations and take action against this, you know, kind of thing. And what is really, really scary, and I think, you know, when we talk about it, is the intellectual property part.
Yes, you know, a lot of people don't understand what that is. You know exactly. So maybe you could just briefly explain what that is, and then maybe give some examples of what you're going to talk about.
Sure. Well, I mean, when they talk about intellectual property, it basically is something that protects copyrights, patents, you know, things that you've invented or written, or you know, music, entertainment, anything like that. But it can also govern medicine, things like, you know, genetically modified food organisms, all kinds of things like that. So we've got these intellectual property things that protect anything that any company invents. What has happened, and this is actually something that, you know, again, you know, under NAFTA, for example, you know, Canada has been threatened, for example, by pharmaceutical companies for not agreeing to extend a patent on medication, because one of the things that is protected by some of this intellectual property stuff is the ability to, if you come up with, for example, a new use for a drug, you can then restart the clock on a patent. And certain countries have said, we're not going to go for that. So, for example, Canada, that wouldn't let a certain pharmaceutical company restart the clock, or they wouldn't include that drug in a formulary as an effective treatment for a certain disease, thus allowing them to argue that it's a new drug. They're suing them for that. And you know, in Canada, for example, has single-payer health care, so their health care system is being threatened.
Yes.
And, you know, and so we're in a real conundrum. For example, Internet, and this is a biggie, you know, that we should probably talk about, because I know the Internet's been big in the news this week. The Internet would be really threatened. I mean, forget about the fact that now telecoms have, you know, created their own toll road for corporations, and the rest of us are going to have to wait in line for the slow lane as it stands. Right now, if the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership go through, we who are just regular everyday users of the Internet would have all of our email potentially scanned by our Internet service providers. They would actually have to be the Internet police. This would do horrible things for our privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But more significantly, you know, sharing links to copyrighted content could potentially get you kicked off of the Internet altogether after, you know, two or three infractions. And, you know, the average user, I mean, think about what that does. You know, we pay our bills online. We do everything online. We communicate with each other online. This is going to create a disaster of epic proportions if it goes through, because corporations are going to be able to monitor everyone's Internet activity and charge anyone that they wish, you know, at will. I mean, you know, we look about, at, for example, you know, Aaron Schwartz, who was going to be prosecuted and face 30 years in prison for potential copyright violations because he downloaded articles that were part of a database that, you know, was really accessible, and, you know, there were, you know, academic articles for many, many years before, but somebody wanted to make an example of him, so they found an arcane little loophole, and they were threatening this kid, who was a genius, and he ended up killing himself over it.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of a crazy sort of world that we're entering, and we as consumers, as citizens, as everyday people, all we really have is our voice and our vote. We have, you know, I talk about the 99% and the 1%. What we still have is that we are 99%. And if we can simply get our voice heard, and that's one of the things that we've been trying to do, is make this more public. Now, Senator Elizabeth Warren, who shares my same name, and God love her, has taken a wonderful, wonderful attitude toward this, actually came out during the U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman's confirmation hearings and said, if something like this has to be kept secret in order for it to pass, then maybe the United States shouldn't be entering into this kind of agreement.
I think that's quite a sensible and, you know, right to the point statement, yes.
So we're, you know, we're doing our best to try and shine a light on it.
Mm-hmm.
In the last, you know, several weeks, there have been a couple of great campaigns going on. There was a Stop Fast Track group, a coalition that came together, and hundreds and hundreds of groups, I mean, labor, environment, you know, anti-GMO folks, internet freedom, progressive groups like PDA and Move On, everybody came together. You know, the faith community came on board. Virtually, you know, everyone who cares about anything and has a conscience in the United States, in Canada, and abroad, we all came together and said, this is not good. and we've been doing our best to try and shine a light on it. We have a letter to the editor campaign going on right now. And if we have time to make a pitch for a place to go, I would recommend that everyone visit tdamerica.org/TPP. And that page also has links to the Public Citizens Global Trade Watch website and other affiliates like Communications Workers of America and the AFL-CIO and Sierra Club and the anti-GMO folks and Network Catholic Social Justice Lobby. Everybody that is working on this, the Teamsters are big in this. I mean, all of the groups that protect America. And what's interesting is that we've also been joined from folks across the aisle. Liberty Group are on board with this. Coalition for Prosperous America and, American Jobs Alliance, we've had people that have come from the Tea Party on board with this. I mean, if you look at the members of Congress, we had Rosa DeLauro and George Miller started a Dear Colleague letter both in 2012 and 2013, asking folks to sign on saying that they opposed Fast Track, and they, cited all the things that were wrong with TPP and why Congress needed to be able to scrutinize it more effectively. Then we also had Walter Jones create a letter, and it was signed by Michelle Bachmann and members of, the Tea Party and Liberty faction of the GOP. So it's an interesting kind of thing where folks on both sides of the aisle who wouldn't agree on probably anything else do agree on this simple principle, which is that everyone should be able to see what's in this. And the idea of global corporate crony capitalism, taking over and overriding our democratically passed laws or our basic right to protect our communities or make decisions for ourselves, our ability to self-govern, this just isn't right. This is not something that we should allow to happen. And the only remedy that we really have is to get together in large groups and protest as loudly as we can. And I'm not saying that everyone should, go out in the middle of the street and yell. I'm saying write letters, fill those switchboards in Congress, write to the U.S. Trade Representative, write to the President, start petitions. Make sure that they are flooded, absolutely flooded, with messages from us saying we don't like this. And we are going to remember this, especially now this is an election year. We have the ability to put pressure on our members of Congress and the Senate and say, look, we expect you to have our interests in mind when you decide on these things. And we will remember if you don't represent our interests. That's a very, very powerful thing.
Indeed. In fact, this is one of those, I think, few issues where it's a make or break issue in the sense that, for me anyway, anybody that votes for the approval of this, I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat, I'm not voting for them. I mean, it's just that essential. And I really appreciate you sharing that story about how this has broad appeal. I mean, because, there's a lot of issues out there like that that cuts across, political party lines and identity politics lines. And those are the issues I think that are really, really important to defeat. Corporate attacks on our, our safety and our standard of living and our actual survival and health. Liz, I'm just so happy you called in today, and thanks for sharing all that with us. And maybe we could get you back on the air sometime in the future to give us an update.
Sure, I would be glad, absolutely glad to do that. And anytime. And just remember www.tdamerica.org/TPP, and that has links to all of the other sites as well.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, David.
Goodbye.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Tonight, on stage with borrowed angel's sword, and a crossword puzzle of stolen chords, I'm alive.
Okay, we're back. That was Tom Morello with It Begins Tonight. And Bill, you said you had some raw audio for our listeners about the protests outside McDonald's headquarters last week.
Yeah, this is from YouTube.
Okay.
As a matter of fact.
Slave wages ain't right. That's why we out here protesting. And if we keep doing it, we'll definitely can stick together and it's gonna happen.
Yeah, basically, folks. That's my scene. Oh, it's over.
Okay.
There we go, folks. Yeah, the visuals that you did not see, of course, many placards, flags, and looked to be probably about 200 people. Isn't that what the crowd estimates have been?
Well, 138 were arrested.
Wow.
The organizers said 2,000 people were
2,000?
There.
2,000? Yeah, okay. I was going to say, because the photos I saw, it looked like a huge number of people.
Police estimates were anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500.
Okay. Yeah, well, this is just all they could get on the camera.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it just... You know,
They did say that Mary Kay Henry, president of SEIU, was arrested. And
celebrity bust.
Yeah. Reverend Dr. William Barber II, head of the NAACP's North Carolina chapter, led the march onto a sprawling McDonald's campus. So
mm-hmm.
he says, we can't treat corporations like people and people like things, he says. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah, we need less controls on people and more controls on corporations as opposed to the other way around. I mean, that's the ruling neoliberal doctrine is less controls on corporations, more controls on individuals.
Well, for example, Dave, I think that, I don't know, maybe somebody like the Sierra Club should be able to sue some mine or polluting facility in China or somewhere.
Well, yeah, of course,
instead of it being the other way around where it's a corporation gets to sue a government.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. I mean, this is just this is some really frightening stuff. If you think about it, if it's taken to its natural, conclusion, the problem is that these people. I mean, there was a book written about 18 years ago by a man named David Corton called "When Corporations Rule the World." And man, I'll tell you what. I mean, what he predicted was going to happen in that book almost 20 years ago has come true, and then some. And, it's really frightening stuff. And, I mean, he talks about how this is not just about certain greedy, wealthy individuals. He said this is like a systemic thing because it's almost like the system itself, especially that of global finance and various, what's the term I'm looking for? Basically, if a corporation would try to do the right thing, it'd be gobbled up. I mean, it's almost like they've created like an entity, like a Frankenstein monster.
You have to really compete and get big to survive.
Exactly.
Right? And that is a really big problem because the time of growth is done.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have enough planet. We need about 5 planets if we are going to have growth-oriented economies.
Mm-hmm.
Where can we go? What can we do? Yeah.
There's different kinds of growth, too. I mean, there's smart growth and there's, I guess for lack of a better word, dumb growth. I mean, when you're destroying your environment, I mean, that's definitely, that's not very...
Well, yes, we should be having more growth in solar panel industry than we have in...
There's all sorts of technologies out there, like wave technology.
This is what the real tragedy is. If we would have spent the last 30 years getting ready for what was inevitable, which is the end of easily obtained hydrocarbons, which mm-hmm. is almost like we were cheating
mm-hmm.
using that stuff, and installing all of these things and working on those technologies better, then we would have free energy pretty much now.
Yes.
You would be getting into your electric car that was charged up through the solar panels and
on the roof, yes.
windmills
yes.
And so on.
Oh,
and
but corporate America can't have that, Bill. They can't make any money off that.
Yeah, well, you see, well, some people can, you know. That,
sure, some people can, right. That comes back to another kind of root problem here is that certain corporate special interests have gotten so powerful that they control our government. Oil and gas industry. I mean, I saw like just a couple weeks ago how Oklahoma's now passed some kind of punitive tax for anybody that's
right.
putting solar panels on their homes.
Yes, that's correct, and that's just totally ridiculous.
Oh.
But and here's a bad one too. You say you put solar panels on your house, even without special legislation. Well, you've just increased the value of that property.
Yes,
you know, so you're going to be taxed for them.
Yeah,
and I haven't been looking at this recently, but there have been many subsidies and tax breaks for installing
yes.
these things. And I don't know, maybe we should get on before they're gone.
Yeah. Okay, you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on Listen Support Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois, and we're going to leave you with a little music from the Flobots. And stay tuned for the Union Edge with host Charles Showalter out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And until next week, be safe. Power to the people. Take care.
There is a war going on for your mind. Media mavens mount surgical strikes from trapper keeper collages and online magazine racks. CoverGirl cutouts throw up pop-up ads infecting victims with silicone shrapnel. Worldwide passenger pistons deployed paratroopers. Now it's raining pornography. Lovers take shelter. Post-production debutantes pursue you in NASCAR chariots. They construct ransom.